Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. We're going to be talking about a couple of really, really important things. But I think the main thing is that get your metrics right, because sometimes you could be seeing something which shows outrageous success, but in the real world is failing abysmally. And the real world is what drives profit margins and customer satisfaction and things that actually matter.
Yeah, no, I agree. What we're talking about is EV charging stations. And
yeah,
one of my favorite images is probably 6 months or more ago, was it was an electric vehicle and on the side of the road, and there was a gas generator in the trunk. And it was a short little meme video. I'm sure it was staged, but somebody pulled over and said, "Hey, can I help you?" I says, "Yeah, can you help me get the generator out of the trunk so I can get it started and hooked up to my car to charge?" Mm-hmm. And it's a stretch of desert road somewhere, and he's like, "Can I help you? You got a flat tire or anything?" I goes, no, I just ran out of juice, so I gotta plug, get my generator running. That was his redundant charging system. But it might be related to that. The stat you ran into was 71% of attempts to charge don't work, or work only 71% of the time are successful.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a study done across 2,400 charges, and the study looked at 100,000 charging sessions. And essentially, across these charges, there's an uptime rate of between 98.7 to 99%, which is high. Let's just say it's high.
It's just there. It's ready to be used.
Yeah, it shows that essentially on the app, big green light, drive here now, charge, and you'll be able to charge your EV. But only 71% of charging attempts actually succeed. So that means essentially from the customer's perspective, they're more interested in the charging attempts. In fact, it's even more infuriating to drive to an EV charging station which says it's available, but it doesn't work. You'd much rather it be shown unavailable so you don't waste your time driving there. Only to later on work out that it doesn't work. So some of the issues, it's a little bit fascinating because Tesla has a very vertical integration structure where essentially it owns everything. And mm-hmm. that makes it a much easier to control the ability for their vehicles to get charged by their infrastructure. But when you have charging stations provided by a myriad of different companies and everything else, let's not forget, this is a hugely software-centric process. And so some vehicle initiating protocols just are out of date, or the EV station itself is so old. When I say,
it's like two years old,
that some of the protocol updates are simply beyond the hardware. And so they can never be upgraded to what some new vehicles demand. And so all of a sudden, what should be close to 10 out of 10 successful charges come down to 7 out of 10, which is a big deal.
Do they show in this article, do they show the reasons for it not being successful? Like this credit card couldn't be read, or was overdrawn or something like that, or denied, or was it incompatible system where they didn't have the right plug or the right connect software protocols, or...
Well, the main issue is this. I think the report that is at the heart of this story, it recommends three key things. One is essentially, instead of looking at uptime, adopt the first time charging success mm-hmm. as a central metric. The second thing they recommend is to implement preventive maintenance programs rather than relying on short-term hardware fixes.
Yep. Yeah.
And last but not least, create a collaborative industry approach to standardizing protocols and sharing data. And we've actually seen that play out a lot. It's not that long ago, when I say not that long ago, 100 years ago, when electricity generation was starting to take over the world, virtually every country had this comedic approach to standardizing electricity, both in terms of voltage and frequency, such that individual towns and states and provinces and everything else, the local electricity generation station would set its own voltage and frequency to the town it's supplying to, and then essentially had its own line of appliances with the unique ability to feed off those voltages, unique voltages and frequencies. Mm-hmm. And it took some effort and a few careers needed to be ended for everyone to say, all right, let's have a standard voltage and standard frequency, which of course makes sense.
And of course, we still have 20 different plugs that you have to carry with you when you're traveling internationally.
Right. So ideally it would be global, but we're not quite there yet for whatever reason. And even what blows my mind is even globally, when you have countries with the same voltages and frequencies, they still have different outlets. It's just, why? Yeah. Anyway.
I think that's part of that legacy. It is like the whoever was making the plugs and the outlets, you know, had local sway over the adoption of the standard or not. And they said, no, we're keeping this. We're going to keep selling our unique plugs. And that's right. It's I know there's what, three major systems. I know Japan runs on 100 volts. US is 120, and most of the rest of the world seems to be on 220, 240, something like that, for household outlets and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it just goes to show that, you know, those who don't pay attention to history are doomed to repeat it. And of course, like the regulatory approach to EVs and autonomous vehicles has been beyond abysmal. It's sort of, you got these career regulators who are failed engineers, let's be honest, in many cases. who are normally supposed to be leading the way in terms of guiding what's safe and what's okay, clearly have no idea. And they're saying, well, how about you industry tell us what's good EV, what autonomous safety standards look like. And the industry is going, that's not our job. We believe we're safe. So can you tell us we're safe? And you have this ridiculous circular standoff where the so-called regulators are saying, well, you need to tell us what is safe so we can tell you if your thing is safe. And the industry going,
yeah, in a couple of years, the industry engineers will get staffed under those regulatory boards, and it'll eventually resolve. But it's not helping the teams and the startups and all the other companies that are saying, hey, I mean, my local grocery store, the one we go to all the time, they put in, I think, 5 or 6 charging stations.
Right.
It's a perfect place to have a whole slew of these. If you want electric vehicle owners to shop at your store and you're going to be there for 20 minutes anyway or half an hour anyway, it's a perfect place to put these things. And it's a little extra revenue for that shopping center, but it's only if they work.
Right.
It makes me think, I got to run some errands later today. I think I'll drive by there and see how many of them are, you know, have a sign on them saying auto service. And I ran into that with the cheap gas station I go to that, oh, probably half my visits, there's a hastily written piece of paper stapled to the, you know, wrapped around the handle saying auto service. And the more sophisticated stations actually have more of a cloth or a fabric or some plastic sign they hang out because they do it so often. But there's 12 stations there, or 12 nozzles there, and it takes on average, what, 5-10 minutes max. Even if you, usually I get behind somebody blocking my exit that wants to wash their windshield and their hubcaps and everything else. But the idea is that these systems need to be as reliable or more reliable in that first ability to complete a charging session, to initiate it and complete it first time, on par with what the gasoline pumps are. That's what we're accustomed to over the last 100 years. And if it's not as good as those, and you're just talking about availability, well, what makes me think of is that when you first mentioned is, you know, use the metric that matters to your customer. And whereas they can advertise this availability one at being very high in marketing and everything else and say, oh, we're always available. And it implies something other than the statistics of what they're actually going to experience. But I don't see there's much other use for that other than internally they're happy admiring their own achievement and not what's needed or useful for the customer.
Right. And it's a little bit easier to, it is, not only is it more flattering, but it is easier to measure and monitor. So you can tell if you're relatively easily, if your EV is working or not. Sorry, your charger is working or not, if you're mm-hmm. the company that owns the charger. But it's much harder for you to tell if a vehicle drove up, the owner got out, plugged in, and went, oh man, this isn't working, and drove away. That's incident right there is a little bit harder to actually capture.
Oh, I don't know if that is or not. There's lots of reasons a person would start and go, oh, I'm running late for my appointment. They put the nozzle back. But in order to initiate a charging, they have to identify who's paying for it.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not feasible. I'm just saying it is a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
It's so much easier from just a simple maintenance perspective of fleet management just to say, oh, okay, yep, that's turn on. It's good to go. No downtime, of course. Or, I'm just saying it is slightly more challenging. You'd have to then have someone go through a boarded attempts and things like that. I'm not saying it's impossible, nor am I saying it's actually unreasonably feasible, but it is involves a little bit more work. So I'm just talking about why do we have these really basic measures? Well, the easiest one to measure is a guy out there swinging a spanner on it, yes or no? If the answer is no, it's good. That's the easiest way of saying it's working or not.
Well, that's kind of a poor excuse for monitoring any measurement. It's just because it's convenient.
I'm not advocating.
I understand that. It's not the way we would typically approach it. But I've run into that so many times where they're monitoring a process. And why are you monitoring this? We bought this system that can make these solder paste measurements for us, and we want to use it. So, okay. Do you have problems with solder paste? No. Okay. Why are you monitoring it? Because we can. And they didn't want to monitor other stuff. Where do you have all the causes of all your rework in this line? It's over here and here and here. Well, why aren't you monitoring those? We already are monitoring the solder paste, and we don't want to move it because it uses a different measurement system. Okay, so you really don't want to fix these things, then? Is that what you're saying? And that's what it gets to, is if you're going to set up a set of metrics, and yeah, you might pick the one that's convenient or flattering or whatever, but how about using the set of metrics that actually allow you to make decisions and make improvements that matter versus, I think you use the term a lot, Chris, instead of just admiring the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of them sort of sneak in there. I mean, some of people it's very conceivable that initially when people were working out how do we monitor our charging stations, that just simply focusing on uptime was seen as quite customer-centric with the issues with firmware and everything else not being as initially apparent. It's still an emerging technology and emerging industry. Mm-hmm. So yep. A lot of these scenarios happen where they say, well, it's easy to measure uptime. We genuinely believe this will correlate with the customer experience. So this one's good to go. But obviously with what we know now, that probably needs to change. So it might not even be initially malicious or lazy. It might have been a genuine belief based on what they knew at the time that uptime would reflect how the customer experiences their charging experience. But when you have this lack of, One of the things the report identifies is that there is virtually every piece of charging infrastructure falls outside any form of regulatory framework. So,
except for local building codes, which drive
those, but it drives me up the wall that you can't take a Kinder Surprise into the US for so much other stuff. You can just do.
That-
regulated. Yeah.
But what it's the idea is that we haven't learned from the past. And in some regards, it's, you know, it's a free market, and it's, you come up with lots of inventions and wait for one to sort itself out and dominate. And I think Tesla's kind of done that, and their stations seem to be getting good press and actually worked and stuff like that. Yet people are carrying adapters so they could plug into whatever charger they happen to have available to them. And then they run into issues with protocols and safety and all that other stuff that then would abort or not even initiate a charging session. But yeah, I don't know. It reinforces for me, I hold off getting totally EV until this gets sorted out. But the few amount of miles I actually drive, I don't think that's a good excuse. I don't foresee going anywhere that I'll have to charge remotely. I could probably cover all of my miles just at home, but that's my circumstance.
No, I mean, it's going to be here, but I do believe that one thing that could have been foreseen is just having protocols for charging. I mean, the fact that we don't have protocols for charging just makes it so much more obvious that the regulators are not going to be anywhere near coming up with protocols for what is safe autonomous vehicle before anyone of us dies.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm thinking of the European Union finally got serious with consumer electronics, going, stop it. USB-C plugs, that's it.
Yeah.
Just pick one, use it for everything. You know, you're going to use this 10-watt system for your charging, and that's it. We don't need, because, and I know what I wish they would have passed it a long time ago. My briefcase used to be full of all kinds of different plugs and adapters and charging ports. And I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I really held off buying a new laptop because I had the standard USB port on it, the old one. And I had all of the chargers for the variety of other gadgets I was carrying along with me that used the standard USB port. So if I bought the newest machine and it had USB-C on it, or I think it was Lightning ports on it, I had to get all new either adapters or new charging cables. And the cables were not, this is the Apple environment, so the cables are expensive just because you have no other option. Now the European Union says, no. Pick USB-C. If you don't have it, we're going to fine you or charge you more or do whatever. But just stop it. Stop the madness. We're nowhere close to that with the EV. Well, what are the Europeans doing around charging stations? They seem to be a little more heads up and regulatory-ish than we are.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't really comment too much. I do believe that there are a lot fewer issues over there. But I don't think that I'm not going to go back to the little conversation you had about Apple and let your favorite little
ecosystem. Apple,
it was Apple that was being a problem over in Europe regarding the USB-C. And I remember one of the submissions where Apple essentially said that we can't use USB-C because it takes up too much space and we'll have to sacrifice performance, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, its competitors that it's consistently up against have USB-C, and no one company is dominating in terms of performance. They're all pushing each other. It's funny that your favorite little startup is the one that's dragging the chain in that one.
No,
Microsoft off the hook every time they do something silly, so you have to.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I get it. And it's their vertical integration, and they're, we invented it, and we want you all to use our system. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't think that's going to fly. But anyway, it would be nice if there were. Even in the U.S., we've got all these outlets that seem to all work, and I can go anywhere in the country and plug in whatever, and it just seems to work. And I can travel internationally with a small sachet full of adapters and transformers and other stuff. And in most electronics nowadays, the portable stuff, I can plug into a 240 or 120 or 100, and the power supply will adapt and provide the charge to my devices. So you can travel with some ease, but it's not uniform. And the trouble is you can travel 100 miles in an EV and be confronted with three or four, maybe five different styles of charging systems that some are compatible with your system, but others aren't.
Right.
And I bet you I don't have an EV, as you listeners can probably tell, but I bet you there's a website or an app that says, oh, this upcoming charging station is compatible with your system. I'm sure there's a guide that covers stuff like that.
You would think.
Well, there's our $1 million idea for the day. Well, that's one of our happy listeners pick up on that one and create an app, or there's probably competing apps on it and each claiming the most reliable information, which would be right. A different problem.
It'll eventually sort itself out in a way, but it's going to this. But that's sort of a lazy sentiment. I mean, engineers and regulators could get ahead of this curve, save years of frustration and millions of lost development dollars and everything else, and just make this problem go away in a heartbeat. Just provide some sort of regulatory guidance moving forward. But yeah, we know better, unfortunately.
Yeah, it might be a whole other episode, is the evolution of technology in different industries, how they eventually got to sort it out. And sometimes not for the better, but sometimes just if there's reasons during the high evolution period, high turnover rates, that there aren't standards, because we don't know which one is going to win. And everyone's hoping their unique IP system will, for one of many reasons, but that's a whole different topic. So anyway, yeah, I'm not buying an EV today. Hybrid's the way I'm going. Yeah, that's my thing. But in the meantime, if you do have an EV, what's your take on this? You know, what's your success story? Do you find the one station outside your home that works and you just plan on stopping there and do your business in that local area? Or is it really throwing the dice, find one that works for you? If you've noticed similar type of behavior in some other industry or something, that'd be really great topic. So if you know of some other one, give us a couple of seeds for it. That might make another interesting topic of some of this engineering challenges that we face and making our lives a lot much easier. So let us know, or that if you have a question, we always look for those. Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. And Chris and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways for you to get your questions or comments over to us. We'd really appreciate it. I don't know. I never asked you, Chris. Do you drive an EV?
No. It's I tend to not upgrade my vehicles too often.
Just buy a good, reliable one and stay with it?
Well, yeah. It can also just mean that I can get to... too spoiled, let's just say that, and say I tend to upgrade vehicles when I need to, yeah. Which means I don't have an EV. But when I do upgrade, the next one, I think it probably will be an EV.
Yeah, hopefully by then it'll be all sorted out. But I'm staying with my 2000 Toyota Tacoma little pickup truck. It's got all the features I need: steering wheel and four wheels that move the vehicle around. And it's just, that's all it needs. That I have to put air in the tires once in a while, but yeah, stuff like that. But anyway, thanks, Chris. And thanks for bringing this one up. I hadn't thought about it much. I have some experience with working with a startup that was making charging stations, and they didn't quite make it, is what I heard last. But could be lots of reasons for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, good chatting with you, Chris. We'll talk to you again soon.
Always a pleasure, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show,
please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.